In this weight-obsessed world, I think I've got what is basically a gold medal of weight loss by losing 10 kilograms in 10 days. There's more to it to describe it. And this is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. So, less than, I suppose, 12 days ago, I had a heart operation. When you have an operation, you're... fluid increases, your fluid retention increases. So I topped the scale at 101 kilograms. And 10 days later, I measured on a different set of scales, 91 kilograms. So that gives you 100 kilograms, losing roughly 10 kilograms, or loss of 10% of your body weight. Now we'll have to describe what's going on here. Now, I myself am, as a scientist, I'm a little bit sceptical of it. They were different scales, but it is true, measuring myself on, or having been measured on, precision scales, hospital scales, 24 hours apart, dropped from 96 kilograms to 93.6, or that's a loss of 2.4 kilograms, or 2.4 kilograms in 24 hours, or 100 grams per hour. That is verifiable. That's a solid number. So what's going on here? You know, what's fluid retention and things like that? And I think it's by discussion of this, you can sort of come with me on my molecular journey to sort of ask some basic questions of what's going on here. So essentially, this is all about a living organism with membranes. A living organism like myself, or what we're going to do is have your experimental piece of celery, is a series of little bags of fluid, and the bags of fluids have membranes on the outside. So a bag, if you take a bag, you pick out a bag out of the kitchen and fill it with water, a small sandwich bag, that's pretty close to what a cell is like. It's got a membrane on the outside of it. That membrane, for all intents and purposes, can hold water in or out. Obviously, if that cell is going to drink, water has to pass in through the membrane, and also basic nutrients and other things pass through that membrane. So it's a bit unlike your plastic bag, which reliably is not wet to touch. Cells a little bit wet to touch, water can go in and out of themselves. So for our first experiment, I'm going to ask you to get some celery. This is that crunchy stuff. May have a little bite of it, crunchy. And what I'm going to do is ask you to get that celery and put it in a glass of water, two glasses of water. That's a, you've got two celeries and two equal glasses of water. Each in one glass of water, I'm going to ask you to add some salt, a fair amount of salt. And what will happen is you'll stir it up with your piece of celery, put the two glasses in the fridge, marking one glass with the celery with salt in. So if you leave it, I think, overnight, or I think it's as little as 4 hours, you can pick it up. And the celery, which is actually in sticking in the salt, will be all floppy, flaccid. So what's happened there is that the water has extracted from it, and the water, the celery in the fresh water will still be crispy. Now, at this stage, the second part of the experiment, you swap over the celeries. So the celery which is in the fresh water, you put in the salt water, and the celery which is in the salt water, you put in the fresh water. And you want to wash them off first, so it's all clear. And lo and behold, the celery which was floppy becomes turgid or strong again. That's the word for cell membranes, brimming with water, and vice versa. So this is a good experiment with the controls to make sure what's going on. And obviously, I couldn't do too many control experiments with what's going on. So with me, they did something fairly similar to it. Put some fresh water in me, and I swelled my membranes swelled up with water, and I became enormously full of water, so stiff that the day after the operation I found it very hard walking because my legs were completely stiff. They were completely swollen with water. And you could... felt like a super athlete, a bit like Arnold Schwarzenegger or something like that, because my flesh was super strong, rippling strong muscles. Not really, I was just absolutely full, full of water. And so what they do is they feed you water tablets and they just drain, always looking at your urine output. Goes into a nice, rather fashionable handbag there while you're still under the catheter. So they put a tube in to you which bypasses your bladder and just drains out directly, measuring the litres of water out. And there's a restriction there. So essentially, one of the things we have to go into is trying to explain, there's obviously salt is involved in this, and what actually happens is that salt, so we're going into a basic explanation, salt is a combination of a metal which loses its electron, so it becomes a positive ion, and some sort of an ion or negative ion. So for mineral salts, that's usually chlorine, but as we'll see, we can construct some pretty big and interesting anions. This is negative ions which are involved. So the salt itself actually absorbs water. So it's a preservative. You can use salt on some meat to draw out the water and kill off the bacteria. That salt will dry things. It actually does this by electrostatic attraction of the water. One experiment that you can do is get up a plastic ruler and rub it, get up the charge, see that it picks up little pieces of paper, then drop water, a stream of water from a tap, just a thin millimeter thick column of water going down from the tap, so it drip 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 a bit more, not before it's on full, but just so it's actually a thin stream of water. And as you bring up the ruler, the charged ruler to the water will be attracted and bend towards the ruler. It's rather a spectacular process. But this process of being attracted, water attracted to charge, is sufficient to create an osmotic pressure. That is, if you put salt, if you have a membrane, which is a plastic bag, or if you can imagine, your cup is divided in two, your cup which you're putting in water, or your glass that you're putting in water, is divided into by membrane. So you can imagine getting wax and a membrane of plastic or whatever it is, and it's porous, it allows water through, but say not salt. If you put salt, able to put salt on one side and fresh on one side, so it's filled up with water, salt on one side, water would be attracted across, and you'd see the membrane bow into the fresh water as the water is piling in, being attracted to the salt. It's actually an osmotic pressure. And so there's a fundamental thing that myself would be full of liquid is not because I'm eating too much liquid, but because compared to my blood, salt ions has built up inside my membranes, and the water has been drawn out of my blood into my body and accumulating. So once we reverse that, we can magically reduce my mass. That's the thing, a lot of people can lose a kilo, I'm sure, if they go on water tablets and shed the water that they're carrying around. So they might get a bit more flabby because some of the water might think, oh, that's nice and firm. You might get a bit wrinkly. I suppose, particularly if you have a cherry tomato, and you store it in very salty water, it'll come out all wrinkly. similar to yourself. After the operation, not that I had built up water, another view is that I built up too much salt. Now, the overall problem is that my membranes are permeable to the sodium. Sodium is the key problem here. There's too much sodium in there. So why not just drink fresh water and draw the sodium out? Well, the issue is if I had my glass jar with a membrane either side, and I put salt water either side, or salt water on one side, the salt would make its way through this salt permeable membrane. So initially, it might have an osmotic pressure, that is, water going towards the salt. But as the salt goes through, it will automatically leak out of the membrane. The pressure will equalise. So there's actually the way to actually get rid of my sodium. You'd think naively would be just to drink water, and the salt will be washed out. But here comes the rub, is that we can get the negative ion, make various molecules, negative ions on command, and this is where biology comes in. So if I have my mystery experiment I have with a glass, a membrane sealed, so you can imagine a piece of plastic membrane, special membrane, which lets water and salt through, and I pour salt on either side, mix it all together, and then on the left side or one side I put a special organic anion which can't go through the salt, but it likes to be negative. I can actually it will start to draw the sodium ion. It's negatively charged. It will start to draw the sodium ions across, and I'll get some osmotic pressure building up. And so this is exactly what happens in the human body. We have the pressure from your heart, which is obviously a mechanical pressure, sort of pressure similar to a bike pump pressure. And then there's another thing called COP, colloidal osmotic pressure. Colloidal means that these molecules, which are designed to flow in your blood, little balls flow in your blood, are called globulin, flow in your blood, and they are great, excellent positive ion attractors, and they can actually draw out the positive ions, and ineffectively they're there all the time. I think since the first year of life, where you lose your baby fat, it's actually the switching on of your COP factor, actually starts to draw those positive ions out, and when it draws the positive ions out, it draws the water out, and the water is reduced and put out your kidneys, and the water and the salt is put out your kidneys. There's sort of two waste routes, really, for biological products. One is individual proteins broken up by the liver come out as urea, and then the urea is pushed out through the kidneys. But the thing is, and salt is pushed out through the kidneys, because once it's pushed out through the kidneys, it's a waterproof exit. It's a water barrier exit, so it goes out through your bladder and urinated out. It's waterproof all the way through there. There's another route of waste, and that's through bile. So big things like big blood cells, mostly bilirubin, that's broken up. It's blood's got its waterproof cells, so they've got their waterproof layer removed, so they can be water soluble, and it's put in through your bile duct. So there's two routes, but salt put that through your bile duct will just go straight back into your body, because your large intestine's very water permeable. So just going back through there. So it's this special molecule in your blood called albumin. Albumin, albino. It's basically egg white. and it's a single protein. And obviously, I'm sort of very curious about this, trying to work out how does this get organized. So essentially, conceptually, I've got my glass with salt either side of it, and I have, say, a fish pump going to represent the circulation of water, going, for say, from the right side of that glass, and it's somehow pumping ions, the positive ions, out. And the way it does it is by having a flow of these big negative ion molecules as globulins. So a globulin means basically a ball or sphere. And so I can see that if you have some fresh globulin, albumin, and you circulate it in the blood, you can get the fresh stuff to go past your flesh or your cells, and then when it goes back, it's got to go through a point in which it gets refreshed. It changes its charge, and the sodium ions which were trapped are released into your kidneys. So that's a process I really don't understand how that happens. I sort of have got a bit of a view about how it mechanically can happen. So essentially, you have to have this globulin with charges in it, negative charges in it, and we have to have that globulin able to be experience conditions where the amount of charge changes or changes the nature of charge. And this is really hard to get your mind around with conventional chemistry, but if you look at Lewis acids and Lewis bases, which looks as acids and bases in terms of charges, you can quickly see that if you can adjust the pressure and pH conditions, you can tweak the conditions around the abelian such that effective charges change. Now, albumin, if you get this one molecule and pull it, grab it, it's got one end of the molecule and another end of the molecule, and you can actually pull it straight. So it's a straight string. It's a protein. It's a straight string of amino acids. So, and a protein has a backbone of nitrogen, carbon, carbon, nitrogen, carbon, carbon, nitrogen. And so it's a nitrogen, carbon, carbon is an amino acid. So it's an amine group to a carbon with an R. I've forgotten the name of this is the interesting bit. Then a carboxyl group, which is carbon with a double oxygen, and a OH. And what happens is that the OH of the carboxyl group marries up with one of the hydrogens of the nitrogen group of the next amino acid. Two stick together, and water gets ripped off, and the nitrogen gets connected to the carbon. So you get nitrogen, carbon with a radical, carbon with an oxygen, hooks to a nitrogen, hooks to a carbon with a functional group. And so essentially all proteins in the body are made out of linear chains. You can have compound proteins where you've got several of these linear chains locked together with the globulins there. And there's two fairly famous water-absorbing amino acids which you can put in here. It's hard to see how it has such a great effect. These are called asparic acid and glutamic acid. And the R coming off, that's just one, and then a carboxyl acid group. And with the glutamic, which is umami, the meaty flavour, that's got a few more carbons, but still the same carboxyl group, that's oxygen and OH. And because it's an acid, acids are very drying. So if I pour sulfuric acid on something, the major effect is not the acid reacting, it's withdrawing all the water. So another thing, an example, is that if I have sugar and I pour concentrated sulfuric acid in it, it will withdraw the water from the sugar, such it caramelizes and forms this fairly rich toffee-like material explosion, or not explosion, a tube of this quite aggressive water. So acid removes water. So it's, but it, we really want to change the charge in the iron. And so I looked, went back to the molecule. You can go back to a molecule, albumin, type albumin J-mol, and you have a look at the molecule. And what's interesting is that human albumin, has 17 disulfide bonds. And so a disulfide bond is, it's sulfur bonded to a sulfur. And this is a bit of a curious thing, because there's about two or three sulfur amino acids, and none of the amino acids in there have disulfide bonds. So what's going on? So the simplest amino acid disulfide sulfur compound is something called cysteine, and so that's nitrogen, carbon with a radical, carbon with an oxygen, yeah, to go on. But that radical is got a carbon, and then simply a SH, like OH, but SH. S is beneath the periodic table, so that's perfectly okay. So how does it happen? So what happens is that the molecule, if you imagine, it's got a few cysteines. This is on its backbone, a carbon, and then a sulfur. And it's folded such that it comes neck-to-neck with another sulfur. And what happens is that the hydrogens can go off, move off, and with an addition of an extra electron, a negative charge, this is called a disulfide bond. This is really, really interesting. So you've got your carbon backbone chain, but then you've got these cross links which hold into position these disulfide bonds, which are also negatively charged. So actually, your globule molecule is this large programmable negative ion. You can program it with pressure and pH to change its net charge. So you charge it up, send it through the body. When you want to get the ions away from it, you decharge it, harvest the ions, and then just send it back into the body. It's like a beautiful pump. Then this sort of explains to me another story. Albumin is the same as egg white. In fact, it is egg white. So albumin is basically a cell-growing material, which is basically what an egg white is, a cell-growing material. You want to grow your chicken. It starts off as a single cell. It eats the food. So this is basically cell food is in your blood. Your blood is actually nutritious, and the nutritious component is the albumin. So you heat your album sample up. I'd say, oh, this gets me really curious and actually hungry for eggs, because I know I need it. And you cook up your eggs, and I should give you a few tricks for cooking eggs, but you heat it up, and when it heats up, you can actually break your disulfide bonds in your globular molecules. It breaks up, and if you break up sufficient, they can actually, one piece of globulin can hook up with the next disulfide bond from another protein. So the actual proteins don't actually connect together, they actually get stuck together by these disulfide bonds, so they don't spring back together, and you get your egg white forming. And it's sort of like volcanism. Your egg white goes from something which is runny, which you can imagine pumping through your body in blood, to the egg, which is a rubbery cross-linked polymer. There you go. It's the actual polymer chains, kind of extended, and as it moves and shakes and water goes through this, you can see that the egg white forms this beautiful protein polymer. That's the explanation that when you're swollen, you're not swollen with water, but you're swollen with ions, and your albumin process has to actually remove those additional ions from your body and essentially from 1 year old, your body sets up this barrier, this albumin process of removing ions, and if that's disrupted, you revert back to your baby fat. Of course, your body's differently, so that reverting back to baby fat or baby chubbiness in an adult body, you actually distend, get up 10% of your body weight, go through this process. I myself don't quite understand fully the process. I can see now how drugs can actually get pulled into the album. Very interesting. But I myself don't understand how the pH... I can see by chemical formula, but I can't mechanically see how the effective ion concentration of album, the effective ion charge of album changes in the different conditions. But this would be an obvious, very interesting thing to go. The last thing to cover, I sort of chatted with my wife on my strict 15-minute walks. This amazing fact, and that scientifically there wasn't a very strong case to get you fluid restrictions in order for you to get your ions deflated. And the comment was that that your kidneys were doing a lot of work, and you didn't want to do it, give it extra work by giving it fluid. So you may be restricted in the amount of fluid that you drink, but the idea is that the fluid that you drink is restricted to limit the amount of fluid output that is possibly required by your kidneys. So I suppose really you have to check your kidney function to determine your fluid, the fluid intake. But it's a pretty dramatic process, and of course it's a long-term process of getting back to your healthy weight. And obviously if your liver's been playing up before your operation, it's going to be a long, hard struggle for me to actually get my iron level straight. So I know you were hoping for a magic... You can hear the Aussie birds around the place. I know you were hoping for a magic diet process, not a lecture in molecular physics, to help, you know, this fad diet to get you there. But it's sort of an interesting thing that you read a lot about things, think a lot about things, but when you actually are there in your bed sort of suffering from this, you know, bloating, it does mean that you've got this other respect and curiosity when you go back and check out the molecules and get your basic understanding. And by no means is this the definitive explanation. Hopefully you'll be able to research similar to what I'm doing and gain a long-term understanding of what's going on. So just to summarize again, after operations you get fluid retention. The fluid retention is due to an iron imbalance in your body. This is the breakdown of your body's ability to withdraw ions or attract ions away from your attractive proteins inside your body. And so once that starts up, the ions move out, the water moves out with it, and then you have to pump those ions out of the body by actually having a molecule which you can actually tweak at the point in the process such that the ions have an excess pressure or excess, and then migrate in a one-way journey through your urine, I would expect, out of your body. And so that's the explanation, and I hope it gives you some sort of understanding of what's going on, some sort of appreciation, as all of you, I think, at some stage is going to have some sort of operation in this modern world. This is Peter Hill Explains. Thanks for listening.